Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Vegan Ari Show. I am your host, Vegan Ari, and I am joined today, as always, by my festive husband, Miko Alon.
Hi guys.
Thank you everyone so much for listening. We have a fabulous show in store for you today. We're going to open up the show talking all about politics and current events. And then we'll be moving on to the new vegan product segment. This week we are tasting the new snackable Cinnamon Buns Cookie Dough Bites by Ben & Jerry's. And then we'll be closing out the show, as always, with vegan animal rights news. Now, before we get started, I just want to encourage everyone, if you enjoy our podcast, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcasts, and consider helping us spread the word by posting about our podcast on your social media. Now, Miko, let's get down to business. We have been off for 6 whole weeks. For those who don't know, we actually were moving. We moved to the East Coast, and from now on, we will be recording the show from the grand state of New Jersey. Miko, actually on the Jersey Shore. We're right next to the beach, everybody. Miko, how are you adjusting to life in New Jersey versus Los Angeles, California?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a culture shock. It's a really... It is a beautiful small coastal town, so the peace and quiet and just natural beauty of it are wonderful. It is getting a little cold. It is December.
I mean, it is colder than it would be in Southern California, but I think so far this year, except for that one ridiculous week in November where it was absolutely frigid, it's been kind of mild. Yeah, so it hasn't gotten too crazy yet, but January is coming.
And it's not entirely unexpected. I mean, as listeners may remember, we were here for 6 months last year.
Yes.
And we enjoyed it, so.
But we are excited to be on the East Coast. Our move was an absolute nightmare, which is one of the reasons why we were off for 6 weeks. I think we were thinking, oh, we'll just take like maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks off. Yeah, this move was a disaster. I'm not going to go into it, but we are here now, and that's what matters. Now, you might have noticed also that I did not mention Twitter in my intro. Usually I say, you know, connect with us on Twitter and I give our hashtag and whatever. But the truth is I have not tweeted since Elon Musk took over Twitter. I am not really using the platform anymore. And this is because it really saddens me to say this, but I think that he's turning Twitter into essentially a Nazi cesspool. And I'm a Jewish American, and I don't want to participate in something that is essentially a bunch of neo-Nazis and anti-Semites spreading lies and hatred and inciting violence against people like me. And I think what's going on with Twitter right now is really tragic. And it makes, and personally, I think it's sad because Twitter used to be my favorite social platform, and it's the platform that I use to connect with our podcast listeners, and I really don't feel comfortable using it anymore. So I will not be posting about the show on Twitter, unfortunately. And I guess if you want to follow along my adventures, I am on Instagram. If you want to, I mean, maybe I'll post about it on the in my Instagram stories or whatever when we have a new show, but I am on Instagram. The content that I post on Instagram is a little bit different. I do post political stuff on there, but you know, Instagram's more like photos and stuff like that. But if you want to, if you're looking for me on Instagram, my Instagram handle is officialveganari. And yeah, I mean, Miko, what do you want to say about Twitter? I'm so upset that Elon Musk bought this platform, you know, made it from a publicly traded company to a private. Now, I mean, now he becomes, Elon Musk is all of a sudden like the arbiter of what is appropriate to say on that platform. I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well, I have made no secret of the fact that I have long thought that Elon Musk is a complete garbage person. And as you said, he has definitely, somebody put it like this, that it was almost like he put up a like the bat signal for every racist and anti-Semite and homophobe and transphobe that Twitter was back open for business for them. I think that his takeover has been a complete disaster. I remain somewhat optimistic that there might be some sort of correction. I think it's a very profound symptom of the reason that we should not have billionaires. The idea that one person can buy what is, you know, for good or ill, the most significant and important communications platform on Earth. Because
you think so?
Let me explain.
Okay.
If you need to know about breaking news from a country, whether it is a coup or, you know, just something that's breaking news, it is on Twitter 20 minutes before it's anywhere else. It is a crucial human rights platform for that reason. Like, think about what has been happening in Iran and elsewhere that we only know about really because of Twitter, because the official, communications from inside the state are restricted. And it is absolutely appalling that this was allowed to unfold. And, you know, just another reason why we should tax billionaires out of existence.
I mean, I think, you know, just look at how he let Kanye West back on his platform. I mean, Kanye West was banned from the platform because of his anti-Semitism. Elon Musk brought him back because I guess he loves anti-Semitism. And then Kanye West used it to promote more anti-Semitism. I mean, I can't even believe the tweet that got him banned this time, because he has been banned again, was he actually tweeted a picture of the Star of David, and inside the Star of David is a swastika. I mean, this is what he's allowing. And Kanye West is only one anti-Semite that he allowed back on. There are others as well.
He allowed back one of the most notorious neo-Nazis in America who's been banned since 2013. He also allowed Donald Trump back through these fake polls. And I think that there is this, aggressive campaign to try to turn Twitter essentially into like Gab or Parler or these crazy kook right-wing sites where it's just about promotion of hatred and conspiracy theories. But we'll see how long he's able to keep that up. I can't imagine that advertisers are going to be interested. I think it's going to take a moment for an alternative to emerge that is going to have the same kind of influence, but we'll see.
Well, as a Jewish American, I don't want to be a part of it. I've heard the argument that some people are making, you shouldn't cede ground, don't leave, you know, we need the other side, you know, to chime in and be voices of reason and of compassion and of kindness. But the reality is the ground has already been ceded. The man owns the thing. He can do whatever he wants. It's not like it's some public square. It's not. It's owned by this odious trash person. So I am not going to be a part of it. And, you know, it's sad to me also because we're living in a moment where it seems like it's undeniable the rise of anti-Semitism, not just on Twitter, but really throughout the country. And, you know, you see, obviously, the recent stuff with Kanye West, I mean, him going on Alex Jones's show saying, you know, he likes Hitler, and then Trump having dinner with Nick Fuentes, who is a known anti-Semite.
And Holocaust denier.
Yeah. I mean, him palling around with Kanye West. You had this study that came out. I saw this in The Guardian that literally like something like 2/3 of people under the age of 25 have never heard of the Holocaust. It's a scary time to be Jewish. And I don't know what exactly is going on, but I think it has to do with the radicalization, quite frankly, of the Republican Party. I mean, they have really, I feel like there was always this like ultra right wing, KKK, racist, anti-Semitic side of the Republican Party that was like, but I felt like they always tried to keep those people at bay for the most part. I feel like since the election and presidency of Donald Trump, the floodgates have been opened to those people, and a lot of those people have been normalized. And I think what we're seeing now with the rise of anti-Semitism in the country is I feel like these are the chickens coming home to roost, so to speak. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with you. I think that the Republican Party has had a Nazi problem for quite a bit of time. And I think you can definitely trace it to really the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. The normalization of Nazism and anti-Semitism and far-right propaganda. Because if you think back to, I think it was in July 2016, Donald Trump tweeted out a meme that had been created on a neo-Nazi website that showed Hillary Clinton, you know, against the background of A Bet of Money and A Star of David. And, you know, there was an uproar. Trump said, oh, it's always this with today's Republicans. Oh, I thought that was a sheriff's star. No, you didn't. And you took the meme literally from a neo-Nazi website. Was anyone telling him to drop out of the presidential race? No. Look at what followed that in terms of the normalization, again, of anti-Semitism and Nazism and murderous hate. We had Charlottesville, you know, calling neo-Nazis very fine people. We had Donald Trump's, you know, endless blathering about the Great Replacement, which is an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that incited at least two mass shooters. We have him having dinner with Nazis, literally Nazis. I count both Kanye West and Nick Fuentes in that. They're both Holocaust deniers. And the idea that we cannot find one Republican who will condemn this man. Like, there's clearly, this hatred is not a bridge too far. Look at all the people on January 6th who were in the crowd that breached the Capitol with shirts that said Camp Auschwitz.
Yeah.
There's a marriage, you know, this sort of, it's almost like anti-Semitism has permeated the Republican Party to a point where this is viewed as just, you know, one facet of it.
And I think that Trump's reaction to being called out on having dinner with people like Kanye West and Nick Fuentes is all you need to know. I mean, he says things like, well, Kanye West has always been nice to me, so, or with the Nick Fuentes thing, he says, well, I don't even know who he is. That is not the reaction that you should have when you realize that you've just dined with a Nazi. The reaction you should have is, oh my God, I'm absolutely horrified. If I had known this about him, I never would have sat down to dinner with him. This type of person disgusts me, and I absolutely rebuke all forms of bigotry. That would be the appropriate response. But of course, that's not the response, because I think they want these people in their tent. They want these people voting for them. They want these people. This is their base.
Yeah, and it's not just Trump, obviously. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's now effectively the leader of the Congressional Republicans, also spoke at an event that Nick Fuentes assembled. I don't know what kind of, you know, incel Nazi convention it was. They're starting to become indistinguishable from just Republican speaker events in general. But she said, oh, I didn't know who he was. I mean, is anyone buying this bullshit explanation? You're a member of Congress. You don't know where you're speaking. No, you knew.
Right.
That's why you went there.
That's
because
right.
you share those views.
That's right. And I think that it's a wake-up call for all of us. I think that, you know, if you hear somebody speaking in a way that's bigoted, whether it's against, you know, because of they're racist or because they're transphobic or homophobic or whether they're anti-Semitic, it's just a wake-up call for all of us that we have to speak out against it. We have to. This is unacceptable. And so I'm horrified by what I see. And I think that the fact that, you know, we're now talking about a situation where I think it's something like 60% of hate crimes against people based on religion are towards Jewish people. It's by far the most targeted group for religious-based hate crimes. And you have Kanye West, you have Elon Musk, you have, you know, Donald Trump dining with Nazis, you know, and these are hugely influential people in our country and in the world. And I just think if you have Jewish friends, it might be a good time to reach out to them and ask how they're doing, because trust me, it is a very scary time. And I know I speak, you know, on that for Jewish people, but obviously, you know, a lot of other minorities who are under attack as well, like our trans family, people who are targeted for violence based off of race. I mean, but check in with these people. It's a really scary time.
Yeah, and let's not forget that a key part of this far-right extremist neo-Nazi ecosystem is Fox News, which has been promoting the Great Replacement Theory on its nightly broadcasts. Tucker Carlson was the person who's been promoting Kanye West.
Yeah, that's true.
And again,
true.
No one has anything to say about the fact that the Republican Party, Fox News, they've all transformed themselves essentially into a neo-Nazi apparatus.
Let me just say that way before Elon Musk allowed Kanye back onto Twitter, Tucker Carlson had him on his show. So, I mean, and Tucker Carlson is, from what I understand, by far the most watched, I don't want to call him news, but I don't know, sensationalistic, on television. So he definitely has a hand to play in the promotion of this person. But speaking of, you know, we're talking about politics and whatever, before we moved and took 6 weeks off, it was 3 weeks before the midterms. And we were talking about what the country was going to do on November 6th. And it's interesting to me, you know, the media was so playing into this whole narrative that there was going to be this red wave and how terrible things were for the Democrats and, you know, inflation and gas prices and this and that. Yes, the Republicans did take back the House, but only by a few seats. And this was hardly a red wave. I mean, when you look at the history of midterm elections of a first term president, when that person has, you know, the same party in the legislature, this was a historic failure for the Republicans. What do you make of that? And what do you make of the media? Do you think that polls at this point are obsolete? I mean, why were we being told, oh, it's going to be a red wave, they're going to pick up at least 30 to 40 seats in the House, they might even take the Senate, which they didn't take the Senate, thankfully. Why do you think we're being told these things when this is not what happened?
Well, I think that there's a problem. We suffer from a problem, certainly in the mainstream media, that there is this endless need to try to present whatever the Republicans say as just one side of the story. There were all these garbage polls that Republicans did, you know, polling 15 people saying, oh, we're going to take back Congress and it's going to be a red wave. The only reason Republicans were able to eke out control of the House is because of gerrymandering. What this tells us is that the vast majority of the American public does not support the Republican Party. If you look at how Gen Z voted, I believe, depending on what state you are in, it was something like 70 to 80% Democrat. This should be alarming to Republicans that they will not have any representation in our government, which would be like the best thing to happen to the United States this century, if they keep going at it. Because I think their approach has been, I think it was David Frum who once said that if Republicans realize that their ideas don't appeal to the Democratic voting process, they will not change their ideas. They'll just get rid of democracy. That's the only way that they've been able to have anything. I think we can look forward to an embarrassing clown show in the House of Representatives, and which will go nowhere.
Well,
and hopefully when 2024 comes around, people realize that the Republican Party has nothing to offer America except hatred, and now, you know, with extra servings of anti-Semitism.
Well, going back to what you said, I mean, their ideas are not popular with mainstream Americans. I mean, we're talking things like gun control, things like abortion rights, LGBTQ plus rights, all these things a majority of Americans agree on. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, with abortion rights, you have like something like 80% of Americans agreeing that women should have the right to choose, you know, with gun control. It's like a figure like that, you know, with let's just take marriage equality. It's like over 70% of Americans agree that same-sex couples should be able to marry. And so it is out of step with mainstream Americans. And I think one of the really motivating issues was, of course, when Roe versus Wade was overturned. I think that people were motivated, specifically young people. They don't want the government telling them that they should have no control over their bodies, you know? And so I think that did motivate people. I mean, like you said, I guess it's true that they only took it back because of gerrymandering. But, you know, it's fascinating to me that before the election, all we heard from Republicans is like, oh, well, if we take it back, we're going to do something about inflation. We're going to do something about this. And now that they've actually succeeded in taking back the House, now all we're hearing about is how they're going to investigate Hunter Biden. And I just want to know, like, how does, like, investigating Hunter Biden help Americans with inflation?
It's just like
you said, it's a clown car. It's just like, it's a joke already. And I don't know who these people are who vote for people like Kevin McCarthy, but dear Lord. I mean, the man's got like not an original idea in his head. I mean, what is he going to do to help? Look at all of the things that the Democrats did in the 2 years that they had the House and the Senate and the presidency. Did they do everything that, you know, they wanted to do? No, but they did a hell of a lot. I have no idea what Kevin McCarthy is going to do, except, I don't know, come up with these phony investigations, I guess, so we can learn more about Hunter Biden's laptop, which I guess is going to lower gas prices. I don't know.
No, and look at what they've done. You know, when Democrats proposed and passed legislation that was incredibly, you know, helpful to ordinary working Americans, to protecting the environment, all these things, Republicans all voted against it and then tried to take credit for it because these policies are actually enormously popular with the electorate.
The Inflation Reduction Act, the Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS Act, you know, they passed gun control.
Yeah, these people, Republicans have been whining about inflation and gas prices and voting against bills that would improve that situation, and then they try to take credit for it. I mean, this, it is beyond the pale. And again, as you said, you know, yes, Republican politicians are garbage, but who are the people who vote for them? You voted for Lauren Boebert, you're garbage.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, these people, like,
their sins are their voters' sins.
Right.
You all share in the shame that will never wash away, that you voted for this Nazi party.
It is mostly their voters' fault, because those people would not be in those positions of power if people didn't vote for them.
And there is this fanatical cult-like attitude. I was just watching an interview they had with a evangelical Christian Republican voter in Georgia talking about why they're voting for Herschel Walker over Raphael Warnock.
Oh, Lord.
And it's like, here you have, on the one hand, a man who's a literal reverend, who is like, epitomizes what a good, kind Christian would be, and you're voting for a domestic abuser, serial liar, idiot. Why?
A man who paid for multiple abortions.
Yeah. Like, help me make it make sense.
I mean, well, they also love Donald Trump. A thrice married, you know, cheated on all his wives, paid off a porn star, bragged about grabbing women by the you-know-what. I mean,
you know what? This is the thing. Maybe it's time for these people to realize, you know, it's like, you're not, you may call yourselves Christians, but you're literally team Antichrist.
Yeah, but you know what? It's crazy. I mean, Miku and I, if you want to really, you want to see this hypocrisy crystallized, there's a new documentary on Hulu. What was it called?
God Forbid.
It's called God Forbid, and it's about the fall of Jerry Falwell Jr. This is the guy who ran Liberty University. His father was the famous preacher, Jerry Falwell. This is his son, and he ran Liberty University, and this is the guy who was caught basically because he liked to watch his wife have sex with the pool boy while he would watch. And did I say that too many times? But anyway... Anyway, and it's just about, like, the hypocrisy of the, you know, they talk about that situation. They do interviews with the pool boy and, you know, with others. But the whole thing, the documentary for me crystallizes just the enormous hypocrisy of these people who go around and moralize about everybody else and want to tell everybody, you know, who they should have sex with and how they should believe and whatever. And it's like they don't believe any of it. You know, you really think Donald Trump is a man of morality, a man of God? You know, you think Herschel Walker? You know, I mean, wait till you see this thing about Jerry Falwell Jr. And that's not to shame anybody because of what they like sexually or their kink or whatever. I mean, you know, I have no problem. If you're not, you know, hurting anybody else, do whatever you want. But when you are moralizing about others and passing laws and trying to, restrict others from living their lives freely and just being who they are while you behind closed doors are doing, you know, whatever else. Yeah, that I have a problem with. That's why I can't stand Lindsey Graham, because the man is an obvious homosexual who uses his position in the Senate to discriminate against people just like him. It's despicable behavior.
Yeah. Think about, you know, the Respect for Marriage Act, you know, came to a vote in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, who is in an interracial marriage, voted against it.
Yeah.
You voted against your own wife.
You voted against your own marriage.
Yeah.
And Lindsey Graham, too. Okay, fine. He's not married to a man. But like I said, the man's an obvious homosexual. And I mean, it's like you voted against it.
He's devoted his whole career to basically harming people like himself.
Yes.
Like, how fucked up are you that you're doing that?
It's horrifying. And I'm glad you brought up the Respect for Marriage Act. Very happy that passed. Is it perfect? No. But it does go a long way to protecting same-sex couples and their families, and also interracial couples as well. It's astonishing that Mitch McConnell is in an interracial marriage and would vote against a bill protecting the right to be married to someone of a different race. Like, holy shit. But yeah, if you, it's like I said, the hypocrisy is staggering. If you want to check out this documentary, though, I highly recommend it. It's on Hulu, and it's called God Forbid. And yeah, it's the Republican Party in a nutshell, everybody. Okay. Well, with that, Miko, what do you say we move on and taste some new vegan products?
Let's do it.
All right. Yay, new vegan products. Okay, so today we are tasting the new Snackable Cinnamon Buns Cookie Dough Bites by Ben and Jerry's. I found these in the frozen section at Target, and I was so excited to come across these. I think I saw these originally on an Instagram feed. I think I talked about Big Box Vegan before. That guy is amazing. If you are vegan and you want to know about all the new vegan products hitting the shelves, you got to follow Big Box Vegan. He has all of it. Well, I think he posted about it, and I was like, oh, I got to find these. Where am I going to get them? And then I was in Target, and lo and behold, there they were. Now, these come in like a little pouch, and I think the idea is these are like the little pieces of like cookie dough that they put in their ice cream, but now you can just buy the cookie dough itself. This is, of course, the Cinnamon Buns cookie dough. So I'm assuming it's going to have a little bit of a different flavor. I don't know. We did try their Cinnamon Buns ice cream, didn't we? The Ben & Jerry's.
I think it was very good.
That was really good. All the Ben & Jerry's flavors, you know, the vegan flavors that they do are incredible. So Miko, let's give these a try and tell our listeners what we think.
Let's do it.
Okay. Oh, yummy, yummy, yummy. Oh, that's delicious. You know what that's like? That's like eating a mini cinnamon bun. It's like eating, what's that place? The cinnamon bun place? The vegan place?
Cinnaholic.
It's like eating a mini Cinnaholic.
Yeah, that's delicious. I mean, literally, this tastes like if you took, let's say that you had frozen cinnamon bun dough in your fridge and you just ate it out of it. It's very good.
Except that it's not really frozen. It's like still soft
it's
and
fluffy.
Chewy.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's, I mean, it's cold because it was in the freezer, but it's still soft and chewy. It's, oh my God, that's delicious. Packed with sugar, cinnamon. Like I said, this is like eating a bite-sized cinnamon bun. That is delicious.
And I was a little nervous because sometimes when I bite into something cold, my teeth can be sensitive. not too cold. It's fluffy enough that it's really good.
That is delicious. I mean, I guess you can snap. Are you having it again? Oh, you're having another one. Ooh. Okay. I guess you can put these on top of your ice cream sundae if you can't find the cinnamon bun flavor by Ben & Jerry's. You could also just eat these right out
you
of the bag.
Just, you know, sit on the couch, bring the bag with you, and you're good.
They're really, really good. Mm. I mean, like I said, and I'm so excited that they're vegan. You know, I don't know if the packaging, I don't think the packaging says vegan or plant-based on it. So just know when you see the Snackable Cinnamon Buns cookie dough, it is plant-based, you know, read the ingredients just to make sure because, you know, companies sometimes change things. But for now, they are plant-based and they are delicious. So if you're in the market for some cookie dough to throw on your ice cream sundae, I know it's winter's coming up and whatever, but hey, I eat ice cream all year round, so I'm here for it. Yeah, you should look for this. Again, I found these in Target. Miko, what do you give this Ben & Jerry's product?
This gets an A+ from me.
Same. Well, there you have it. Our review of the new Snackable Cinnamon Buns Cookie Dough Bites by Ben & Jerry's. Miko, what do you say we move on and do some vegan animal rights news?
Let's do it.
All right. Okay, everybody, it is time for vegan animal rights news. First story. There was a new analysis done. This was from the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy and Changing Markets Foundation. What this found was that the methane emissions from the top 15 meat and dairy companies rival like entire countries. I'm talking like they said the methane emissions from the top 15 meat and dairy companies comprise more than 80% of the entire European Union's methane footprint. It rivals Russia, like it's more than the entire country of Russia in terms of methane emissions, and that their combined emissions outpace those of oil companies such as ExxonMobil, BP, and Shell. Now, for those who don't understand, methane is a greenhouse gas that is 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide. This is going to greatly accelerate climate change, this greenhouse gas. And, you know, you have to ask yourselves, like, how are we ever going to put a dent in climate change if we don't change the way that we eat? If we allow these companies to continue to raise billions of animals and release Lord knows how many tons of methane into the atmosphere every year. I mean, these figures cannot be denied. They're staggering.
Yeah, and if you think about the fact that obviously as our emissions continue unabated, essentially, it's making the, whatever you want to call them, natural background emissions from things like the thawing permafrost, which is also methane, more methane into the atmosphere, we clearly have to change everything about the way we live if we're not going to want to live on a superheated planet.
Yeah. I mean, there's the findings in this research are just unbelievable. There was another statistic here that Tyson, which is the second largest meat company in the world, that they produce approximately as much livestock methane as the entire country of Russia. Tyson. And they're the second largest. They're not even the first. I think the first largest is JBS. I mean, this is absolutely insane. They said that Dairy Farmers of America produces as much methane as the entire United Kingdom. I mean, this is just, it's horrifying. So I don't know. I know COP27 just happened. That's the, what does it stand for, COP?
Conference of Parties.
Right. And it's the UN's meeting on climate change and whatever. I wasn't following it closely. I hope that they're finally talking about how diet and climate change are related and the fact that we need human beings to eat less meat and dairy products. I mean, come on. Like I said, these findings cannot be denied. Okay, next story. There is a horrific outbreak of bird flu happening right now across the world. And in the United States, in the state of Nebraska, they just killed 1.8 million chickens who were either infected or they were like exposed. But yeah, 1.8 million birds have been killed because of this bird flu. And I bring this up not just because of the tragedy of killing these animals who were just bred into existence to be exploited, but also to say that, you know, some people say the pandemic is behind us. Some people say we're still in the pandemic. I personally believe we're still kind of in the pandemic because COVID's still going around. People still getting it. People still dying. So I bring it up to say that I hope that the next pandemic doesn't begin in a place like this. You know, these are zoonotic diseases. These are diseases that mutate. And so who knows? But I think that factory farming really puts the human population at risk of whatever the next virus is. It's really scary stuff. And speaking of bird flu, across the pond in the UK, they're experiencing, this is supposed to be, they're saying, the worst outbreak of bird flu in the country's history. And apparently 600,000 turkeys, these are their, what they call their free-range turkeys, had to be killed. I'm sorry, 600,000 total were killed. They were either killed by farmers because they were trying to stop the spread of the bird flu, or the bird flu actually killed them. And this was, I think, like half their flock of free-range turkeys in the country. It's like I said, this is really scary stuff. And I hope that the next pandemic doesn't emerge from one of these awful places. But, you know, when we're playing around with fire here. So, okay, next story. King Charles is in the news. He announced recently that he is officially banning foie gras from Buckingham Palace and all royal residences due to animal welfare concerns.
I mean, any progress for animals is very welcome. Obviously, foie gras is a hideously cruel product, so that's something to applaud. Now let's get rid of those fucking bear hats.
Yeah, come on. Come on, King Charles. Get rid of those bear hats once and for all. They're a disgrace. But this is a welcome, I think, step forward. You know, King Charles has been very vocal about climate change. This is an issue, I think, that's very close to him. I know that he also eats meat-free meals as part of his week. I think he does two or three meat-free days as a to kind of be an example for people who want to lower their carbon emissions. He does this out of climate change concerns. And I believe that I think at some point the UK did ban the import of foie gras. But I feel like we talked about this. Didn't we talk about this like a month or so ago? I feel like that law was overturned and now they are selling it again in the UK, which is a disgrace because foie gras is so cruel. It's so horrific. I don't know why any country would want to sell this stuff, but I applaud King Charles for taking the step to say, well, the country might sell it. I'm not allowing it in Buckingham Palace. I'm not allowing it in any royal residence. Thank you, King Charles, for speaking up for the ducks and the geese. Okay, next story. There is a new vegan steak on the market. This is a 1.5-pound tenderloin made by a company called Juicy Marbles. Now, apparently, this Juicy Marbles company does a very impressive plant-based filet mignon. I've never had it. I've never seen it in the store. But I think you can order this stuff online. They have some sort of proprietary technology that they use to make these steaks. I don't know if it's like they use this. I don't know what this is. It's a machine. This is their proprietary technology is called the Meat-O-Matic Reverse Grinder TM9000. That's what they use to make their steaks. And it layers soy proteins into linear fibers to create like the consistency of steak. This 1.5-pound tenderloin that they've just released, I think it's like $60. And I think you have to order it online. So it ain't cheap, but I don't know. I'm intrigued.
I wonder if this is, I saw George Monbiot, who's a very prominent environmental animal rights vegan activist in the UK. He tasted one of these steaks.
Okay.
At a restaurant. And said it's one of the most incredible vegan products he's ever tasted. But he did acknowledge that for the moment, they are expensive. But I feel like as technology evolves, they will become cheaper. But I think it's definitely proof of concept that even if people insist on wanting to eat something that tastes and looks just like meat, it's coming.
Well, if it's 1.5 pounds, that sounds like a lot. So maybe you could like get it and then that could be like a meal for like a family of four. I mean, how much steak can you eat? So if it's $60, I mean, it's expensive for sure, but it's not like, oh, I'm eating this 1.5 pound of, you know, Meat-O-Matic reverse grinder TM9000 meat. You know what I mean? That's a lot, you know? So, but still $60. Yeah, I could see that price tag being a hindrance for, people, you know, being able to buy it. And also for restaurants, you know, maybe they sell to restaurants, but that would be a pretty expensive meal.
And you know what? And I'm not going to compare apples to oranges, but think about how much like, you know, what we think of now as like, an OLED television cost 10 years ago versus now.
Right, right.
So,
yeah, technology, yeah, it becomes cheaper, yeah. You know? Well, if you're in the market for a 60-pound vegan... for a $60 1.5-pound tenderloin, the company is Juicy Marbles, and I believe you can buy it online. Okay, next story. Yves Potvin, who was the founder of Gardein and Yves Veggie. He has a new company. He is doing vegan sushi through this new company that he is calling Conscious Foods, and Conscious is with a K. Now, they are starting to sell their products in Whole Foods markets in Canada. They're trying to expand it pretty rapidly. And they are releasing, I believe it says here, they have a variety of sushi products available. They're doing California rolls, they're doing spicy California rolls, tuna avocado rolls, they're doing rainbow rolls. But yeah, this is his new venture, is he's going to be doing vegan seafood.
Great.
Vegan sushi.
I can't wait to try this.
Specifically. Yeah. I mean, I think Gardein is one of the best plant-based meat producers on the market. So if he's bringing that type of talent to the vegan sushi world, I would love to try it. It's a shame. There was a company, I think they were called Ocean Hugger. And they did the tomato sushi.
Oh, that was so good.
It was so good. And they used to have it at Whole Foods in LA. And I would get that vegan tuna sushi. And I mean, it blew my mind. I don't know how they were able to make ahi tuna from tomatoes. But it was so, I mean, it was uncanny how similar it was to what I remember sushi tasting like. And unfortunately, I don't think Ocean Hugger is in business anymore. I don't think they're making their tomato sushi anymore. But yeah, I'm excited to try this. So hopefully this will come to a place near us soon. Again, the company is called Conscious Foods. Okay, next story. This is a story that is very near and dear to my heart, and I am very excited about this. Carvel, the ice cream maker, is making its first vegan ice cream cakes. I'm so excited about this. Did you grow up eating Carvel cakes in Finland?
No.
Did you have Carvel?
I don't believe
no.
so.
Okay, well, here, it was a big thing. It was a big thing. And I went to so many birthday parties as a kid eating Carvel ice cream cakes. And, you know, I mean, being a vegan of the last 15 plus years, I obviously haven't had this. Well, they are doing, finally, a non-dairy version of their ice cream cakes. They're using oat milk ice cream. And so far, they have two flavors. They're going to be doing a strawberry raspberry Carvel cake and a double chocolate Carvel cake. I can't wait. I have to find these. I wonder if they'll have these in our local store, Miko. What do you think? I don't even know, like in the ice cream section?
I guess
I'm going
to
keep my eyes
off
this.
We'll have to do a Carvel off with the two flavors.
This is very exciting. And you have a birthday coming up, so you're in the market for one of these Carvel cakes.
Or both.
All right, next story. Okay, also in ice cream news, 16 Handles is releasing a new vegan flavor for the holiday season. They are going to be doing a flavor called Chocolate Peppermint, and this is with Oatly. So they're using the Oatly ice cream to create this soft serve. And I don't think I have 16 Handles here in Jersey. I don't even think we had it in California. But if you have a 16 Handles near you, apparently they do a bunch of vegan flavors now. So check them out. And definitely if you like that whole, you know, peppermint chocolate thing, I'm really not a fan. I when it comes to chocolate, I'm a purist, unless it's chocolate and peanut butter or something. I don't like mixing chocolate with mint or raspberry or orange or any of that stuff. So, but if you like that, 16 Handles has got your back. So check them out and get their vegan chocolate peppermint soft serve. And finally, my last story of the week. Jonathan the tortoise, who is the world's oldest land animal, celebrated his 190th birthday.
Wow.
Can you even believe this tortoise was born in 1832? Okay. 1832. And he looks great. I mean, I don't know if he has work done or what, but yeah, look how good this tortoise looks, right? He looks great. I don't know if he had a facelift, Botox, but whatever.
I look that good at 190.
Me too. So, okay, the story is that he was brought to St. Helena, which I don't know. That's a I don't know where this is. I don't know. Canada? Sounds like it's a British overseas territory in the South Atlantic Ocean. Okay, so not Canada. And he was brought there from the Seychelles in 1882 as a gift to someone named Sir William Grey Wilson. And at that point, they thought that he was around 50 years old. Well, he's still there. And he just celebrated his 190th birthday. It is absolutely remarkable that there are animals that can live this long. And I just think this just demonstrates how much we don't know about animals and the fact that they're just incredible. And they can do, animals can do things that we don't even understand. You know, like I hate that human beings tend to measure things like intelligence and whatnot in terms of what we can do. But look at what birds can do. Look at what bats can do, you know, in terms of finding their way around, in terms of going to the same spot thousands of miles. I mean, can you imagine like birds, migrating birds who like go somewhere to the north and then like they fly thousands of miles to the same spot? I can't even find my car in the parking lot, and a bird can go 3,000 miles with no maps, no GPS, and do whatever. Look what bats can do with that weird, what do they do with the sonar shit? Yeah. Look at what whales can do. I mean, it is just unbelievable just how diverse and remarkable the animal world is. And I think that to me, this is just the fact that we can have an animal that can live this long. It's just incredible. So happy birthday, Jonathan the Tortoise. That is amazing. Okay. Maybe we should get him one of those Carvel cakes. Can a tortoise eat ice cream? Maybe it's not
good. That's a nice callback.
You know, he's old. I don't know if it'd be good for him. But at this age, you know what? You got to live.
You can have a little bite.
Yeah.
Have some raspberry cake, Jonathan.
And with that, we have come to the end of another show. Miko, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to thank our listeners so much. You know, I heard from people while we were off, you know, saying that they missed the show. And I really appreciated that. That was so nice to hear from people. You know, a lot of people are like, you get me through my Monday, please. I need a vegan art show. So
we're back.
We're back. So thank you for hanging in there and thank you for listening. Again, if you enjoy our podcast, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you consume your podcasts. And remember, if you want to help us spread the word about the show, we would be so grateful. You can just post about the show on your social media. You know, I sometimes say if you want to spend money, you can take out, you know, TV ads and billboards and bus ads and all that. We're still available for that. I mean, we can do a photo shoot. You know, I've got a really diverse wardrobe. Miko's got wigs. I mean, we can really make it happen. So whatever you got, we would really appreciate you helping us push out the show. And with that, we wish you a wonderful week. We're coming into the holiday season. I don't know how festive everyone's feeling, whether you celebrate or not, but you know, you do you. And if we don't hear from you, I don't know how I would hear from people. Okay, I'll just say this because I said in the beginning of the show, if you want to still connect with us, Miko is still on Twitter. I'm still on Instagram. I'm at official vegan Ari there. Miko's at Miko Alon on Twitter. So if you want to connect with me on Instagram, feel free to do that. If you want to connect with Miko wherever he is, you can do that.
I'm going to be soon on Post.
What's Post?
Post is a new like competitor to Twitter.
Oh.
But there's a wait list.
A wait list?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. There's so many people wanting to join.
Really? Well, okay. Look
I
for
was
Miko.
Number 167,000.
Look for Miko on Post. And with that, we have come to the end of the show. Have a wonderful week, everybody. And if we don't hear from you on Post or Instagram or Twitter, we will talk to you next weekend. Miko, any parting words?
I'm good.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.